You're with George Cruikshank on the Find the Music Network in Sydney, Adelaide and Canberra. 102.5, 2MBS, 5MBS 99.9 and Artsound FM 92.7. I'm joined today by world-renowned jazz and classical music composer, pianist and Sydney resident, Mark Isaacs. Mark's career got underway at the tender age of 12, when he began composing chamber and orchestral works in the Western classical tradition. Since then, he's gone on to a stellar international career, which has included studies at the Eastman School of Music in the US, an Australia Council Fellowship, numerous international awards, work in film, radio, television, and theatre, classical performances with such orchestras as the St. Petersburg State Symphony in Russia, and even the creation of a major oratorio based on the life of Joan of Arc, which involved over 1,000 performers. Welcome, Mark, to Ultima Thule.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
That's quite a CV that you have there, and I'd like to begin by asking if you could give it a bit of context for us. Who is this Mark Isaacs person, and what's his creative existence all about?
Well, I'm still trying to find that out. I think I just have songs within me, you know. I love melody, and running through everything I do is melody. And I actually sort of think that that's one feature, if I can, after a few decades doing it, if I can be permitted to be objective, I think that I do reach out for melody and song and the lyrical side of music. So I think I like to make listeners feel things and evoke emotion in them. So I think what that means is that I don't like to futz around too much with stuff that is just not communicating. You know, I like to feel I'm telling a story and not just focusing in on each word and analysing it, but I want it to be moving forward into a story.
So tell us about the Joan of Arc oratorio. That sounds like something quite special.
That was a magnificent experience, primarily because the amount of performers involved who were high school girls, actually. It was a commissioned by a private girls' school, so we had 1,000 performers. We had choirs, massed choirs, multiple choirs, taking the role of Joan's voices and Joan of Arc herself, of course, a solo voice, orchestra, organ, and I got to conduct it, and it was a long work, and I spent months composing it and a couple of school terms rehearsing it. So it has to be the largest single project I've ever undertaken, all for one night, which was fortunately recorded.
And was that in Australia?
Yeah, at the Sydney Opera House, actually. So it was quite an experience.
You're known as both a jazz and a classical artist. Mm. How do you reconcile the discipline and control that's required within the classical tradition with the more free form of improvisational nature of jazz? Or do they need to be reconciled?
I don't think they do. I think that if you're going to do both, you need to have deep roots into both traditions. But whatever you say, there's a need for discipline and control within jazz, and there's a need for freedom within classical music. And jazz without discipline and control is not very good. And classical music without a sense of freedom and spontaneity is also very dull. But you put these things into different boxes. I mean, the freedom and spontaneity in classical music is not with the choice of notes. It's with other things, the nuances and with the line and how you interpret the line. So there's a time and place for both those things in both those genres, is my answer to your question.
So if you were given a life or death choice between them, which one would you pick?
That's Sophie's Choice stuff. I can't answer that. It's like asking a parent to choose one of their children. But in some ways, I actually do see it as one thing. And as we get further away from it, I think it'll be more seen as a continuum, as jazz just being one of the main changes that occurred in Western music in the 20th century. It was another journey on the one journey. Even though it involved huge changes, in many ways revivals of things, like improvisation was known in classical music in the 18th century, a little bit into the 19th century, and then it kind of went underground for a while. Maybe historians will just see it as in Western music, through jazz and other related forms, improvisation came back, different rhythms came back. And then, you know, they're very different, but if you were just doing classical music, there could be things that are equally different from each other within either of those genres.
So when you are inspired to create a piece of music, what is it that determines whether it ends up being a classical piece or a jazz piece?
Well, that is very much dictated by the performers involved and the outlet for it. I mean, like if a string quartet asks me to write for them, in one sense it's going to be a classical piece in that they're unlikely to improvise. But at the same time, I could notate gestures and phrases and rhythms and chords that will sound very jazz, and a lot of the writing that I do for classical players is quite jazzy. Also, similarly, in the context of a jazz group, I can get into areas that could be quite easily heard as classical or ambient or whatever. So it's driven from the ensemble that's playing it, but that can be circumvented too.
In terms of ambient, where do you actually see your music fitting within the ambient continuum?
Well, I was thinking about this quite a bit in preparation for doing this interview with you, and where I hear the ambient tradition, I actually hear it as part of a continuum, a historical continuum, even though it's kind of a new genre historically in terms of labelling it that way. And I tried to work out what it was about, and I think that a lot of music, it's very hard for music to symbolise things explicitly, but I think a lot of music symbolises interpersonal drama of some kind. It's like a play, in a sense. You can feel, say, it might be romantic, you could feel a romantic feeling between, or you could feel human beings grappling with their place in the world with other human beings. And there's another kind of music that's actually has always been with us, which I think sets the human spirit alone, either with its own inner world or with nature. And I actually came up with my own term, which I called pastoral reverie, for a lot of music that does that. Now, there's a lot of it in classical music, you know, the French impressionists like Debussy and Ravel and Sarti and a number of other classical composers. Really, what they're doing fits the ambient ambit. Why I'm saying actually this is because the particular musical elements that have popularly been known as ambient, it didn't suit me to use them exclusively. I wanted to use a palette that was broad enough for me to, for example, I did not only want to use diatonic harmony, I wanted to use chromatic harmony. In doing the water project that I did as part of the Elements series, I was drawing on Debussy and Ravel and composers such as that. And also in terms of emotion, in expressing the fire element, the music's not peaceful. It's actually quite violent at times, and that could be seen as standing aside from the genre. Where I see it is that I think I can intersect with it in this sort of reverie approach to music, and I guess I'll just introduce things that maybe are not part of the genre. It's either an ambient artist expanding the vocabulary of the genre or a crossover artist coming into the genre and bringing things in from the outside, whichever way you look at it.
I definitely see it as a very solitary musical pursuit. You don't listen to ambient music in crowds.
No, exactly.
You listen to it alone.
Yes.
And there's a very good reason for that. You know, yes. It has a very enveloping sense of resonant sonic space, and I definitely hear that in certainly your piano works.
I mentioned a few composers. Another one is Sibelius, when he's doing those huge glacial fjords. He's painting pictures of that region where I've actually toured quite a bit. A lot of that music, Vaughan Williams, I mean, there's a lot of that. And then also there's a lot of that in jazz too. Not as much sometimes, because jazz is a very urban music. But then when you get over to the ECM side of jazz, the European jazz, that massive, massive intersection with ambient, sometimes they're perhaps indistinguishable, although they would maybe not want to market the music with that terminology. In essence, what the music's doing is the same.
Yeah, one of the unifying features of ambient is that it is a very disparate genre.
Yeah.
And there is ambient music everywhere from Kate Bush to ancient Greece if you look for it. In terms of your work and comparing it with other people who do similar sorts of stuff, do you see any correspondence, for example, between what you do and the piano works of Keith Jarrett?
Keith Jarrett has been a major inspiration to me and an influence, and sometimes I find critics can exaggerate this, but in fairness, I would acknowledge a strong influence, particularly in my jazz work. Probably not as much in the ambient project, but certainly in my jazz work, he's a key influence. In fact, to the extent that I actually must be careful to find my own voice. I'm in a journey now where, as many other artists, you start off trying to sound like somebody who turns you on, basically, and sounds great to you. And Keith was definitely one of them, and probably the prime one. And, you know, I work hard to try and find my voice, which will always be coloured by that, but I don't want to sound like someone trying to sound like Keith Jarrett, if I can help it. And this is a journey for almost every artist, I think, and you can hear in composers and performers that dynamic of influence. And when it's working well, it's there, but it's incorporated, it's subsumed. It's not gratuitous and obvious. It's actually internalised. what came before them and particular key influences that have come before. They've been internalized and then they just emerge as part of the voice, but the voice is still distinct from the influence.
You've released well over a dozen albums in the last 30 years. Perhaps the most appealing of those to the Ultima Thule audience is the Elements series, originally released in 1995, and which I've played tracks from at various times over the years. The Elements is an epic four-disc set of ambient solo piano improvisations inspired by the vast open spaces of the Australian continent. Can you tell us something about that? How did it come about? What inspired it?
It is actually proposed to me by the record company, the ABC. It was their idea, and I thought it was a fantastic idea because they were really wonderful in the way they put it to me. They said, we'd like you to do four discs of solo piano inspired by the four elements of nature, earth, air, water and fire, and just do what comes naturally. The process was very beautiful because I went with my wife, who's a visual artist, who actually did the beautiful paintings on the covers of the CDs. We spent 4 or 5 days in a fantastic recording studio in the Southern Highlands near Berrima and had a beautiful Steinway piano on a large property, and we stayed in an inn not far from there. And basically I just devoted one day to each of the elements, and we'd just walk in the morning and on the water day and sit at the piano and start improvising for a few minutes and then start another improvisation. And each day was like that. And in each day I probably did about 17 or 18 improvisations, of which probably 9 or 10 ended up on the CD, and the others just didn't make it, and well, I had more than I needed anyway. But the tracks on the CD are in the same order that they were played in, minus the missing tracks. So actually quite often the first track on the CD was the first thing I played. The second track might be the second thing. The third track might have been the fifth thing. There might have been a couple in the middle. But I preserved the journey, the steps of the journey, and just omitted the takes that I didn't feel needed to be there. And that was just how it was done. And along the way, I started to think of subtitles for each of the tracks related to each of the elements, because it struck me that there was a huge emotional and textural and dramatic range. If you're thinking about an element like water, it could be incredibly delicate, like I think there's a track called Sunshower, where it's just expressing that dotting of water just caressing you, to right up to rapids and torrents, where it's quite violent almost, and even terrifying. And the same with an element like fire, which you could express the idea of a candle and home and hearth. It can be very intimate. And, of course, you could have a raging inferno, you know, a holocaust of fire. So I just subtitled them. But quite often my wife, who I ended up crediting as co-producer because she would think up visual images, she'd actually, I'd say, well, where am I going to go with the next take? And she'd say I was doing earth. She'd say, oh, I got this image of caves. And I'd run with that image in my head to the piano and try and express that. So sometimes she was giving me visual ideas, and sometimes I was just after the fact saying, oh, that sounds like, well, that, you know, I was doing air and one track just had this in, out. It was just one chord followed by another chord, followed by this first chord, followed by a second back and forth. And I just called it breath because it seemed to be like breathing in and out. But I realised that after I played it. There's this funny thing with music. Sometimes the programmatic side of it can emerge after, or sometimes it can come before and be a trigger.
So the series has been re-released. Who's distributing that?
MGM.
And is it available online as well?
Yes. It should be available from the MGM website, and it can be ordered into stores.
Fantastic. Well, I have one final question. This is a question that I ask all of my interview subjects, and it's, what music does Mark Isaacs listen to at home?
Well, I listen to classical music and jazz. You mean specifically or genres?
What artists are you listening to at the moment? Who's on high rotation in the Isaacs household?
Me. You know, I'm not listening to music at all in the last month or two because I'm writing. So every day I'm sitting at the piano trying to write. I did put on a CD the other day, and I won't mention the artist because I just decided, because it might be taken the wrong way, but I decided that's not what I want to do. So it was actually a marker of what I didn't want to do. But when I want to just relax and listen, which I actually don't do when I'm working because I'm living music all the time, so then music is not recreational. But when it is, I might listen to singer-songwriters like Joni Mitchell or Peter Gabriel or Stevie Wonder. I might listen to composers like Vaughan Williams or Sibelius or Stravinsky or Bach Well, I might listen to jazz artists like Keith Jarrett, Chick Corea, or Miles Davis, or John Coltrane. And that's pretty much the spectrum I work within. And you could add a whole lot of names to each of those categories.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here today. I've enjoyed our chat and look forward to hearing of your future endeavours.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.